Coming up on Fronteras, there's a common misperception about the fastest-growing minority group in Texas's capital city. Many may think that title belongs to Hispanics, but while Hispanics are the largest minority group, they're not the fastest-growing there.
Let's start with sky. Let's draw anything that you see in the sky first.
Although their numbers are still relatively small, Asian Americans are the fastest-growing group in Austin, Texas. We hear about the diverse and growing group. And nearly one in four Hispanics are now former Catholics. That's according to the Pew Research Center.
What we're seeing is a decline in the share of Hispanics who are Catholic, down from just 2010, down 12 percentage points from 67% to 55% today.
We'll take a closer look at the shifting religious identity of Hispanics in this country. First, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project bringing you stories from across the Southwest. Fronteras is a collaboration of several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Planting season has begun in the mountains of northern Mexico. American and Mexican citizens are helping one of Mexico's most isolated indigenous groups, the Tarahumara of Chihuahua. They face the twin challenges of poverty and corruption. Illegal loggers and violent criminal organizations steal their arable land and plunder the mountains. Fronteras' Lauren Madelon of Marfa Public Radio filed this report last spring.
A tractor donated by American citizens in Texas tills a field about 10 hours by road from the U.S.-Mexico border. Corn planting season has started in the Sierra. The Sierra Madre of Chihuahua is a tapestry of superlatives, home of Mexico's most striking canyons, its luscious pine forests, and the world's greatest ultra-long-distance runners. They can chase an animal they're hunting for 100 miles and succeed simply by outlasting the prey. Tarahumara is the Spanish adaptation of Rarámuri, the indigenous language meaning he who walks well, or foot runner. But the Sierra is also where you see Mexico's most plundered mountains, stripped, barren, and dry, its most unrelenting drought, and among its most violent regions in a nation numbed by bloodshed.
Mommy!
We're in the home of a Tarahumara gobernadora, or governor, on the eastern slope of the Sierra. In a tiny settlement, the governor represents nine indigenous communities. Some believe the story of the modern-day Tarahumara begins in 1994. The North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, meant farmers couldn't sell what they grew in Mexico because the market was flooded with cheaper U.S.-grown crops. That was followed by nearly two decades of drought. Then, despite platitudes, the Mexican governments turned a blind eye to the theft of ancestral Tarahumara land by loggers. Add to the mix drug traffickers, killing each other, the Tarahumara, and other Mexicans, stealing land with bribes and bullets to grow the Sierra's only cash crops, marijuana and poppy, needed to manufacture heroin. It's raining. The governor, Palma, describes hunger as un puñal clavado, a dagger to the Tarahumara heart. She switches to her native Rarámuri, describing her people's history. They resisted the Spanish conquest and then the Mexican state, moving ever upward into inaccessible mountains, caves, and canyons that once were their protection. But now the Mexican drug war means cartels are fighting for arable land in a region that's historically been a crucible of crime. Now, Palma says, help pledged during the Mexican election last summer has not materialized. The government said we'd get supplies of beans and corn to eat. They also pledged to help us with a canal system for irrigation, she says, but nothing has come. Then, switching to Spanish, she says people are afraid to plant in many parts of the Sierra. We're always waiting to see what's on the road, because people steal from us. They take our money and our groceries. We also don't plant the way we once did, she says, because we're afraid to venture out into the field. People are also leaving for other parts of the Sierra, she says, because they're afraid. People widely believe that the government apparatus here, police, the military, politicians, are bought and paid for by the cartels. and over the Mexican man who works with the Tarahumara.
The narcos come here to take the ground, you know, the farms with tierras, and the Tarahumaras got scared and don't want to work because got scared.
He says armed men often stop citizens at checkpoints to tell them that they, cartel members, are there to protect citizens.
Come the army, come the police, federal police, but don't do nothing about this.
We arrive at a small plot of land. Tarahumara farmers, protected by another sympathetic Mexican, are planting corn seeds. The man explains how things work in the Sierra.
The narcotraficantes, them are using the Tarahumaras, the people, and them says, you have to work with us, and you have to give me this many acres to grow the marijuana or grow the amapola.
The poppy seed, that's of course the plant that they make heroin and opium from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then if the Tarahumaras don't do with the people narcotraficante says, then kill them.
That's the sound of a cornfield being tilled. Americans and Mexicans in the U.S. are helping the Tarahumara, especially now as planting season begins. One American family from Texas, with roots in the Sierra, said their 10-year-old son should sum up why the family regularly brings in seeds, foods, and cash for the Tarahumara.
Each week they work, and they don't have enough money to buy food or have a shelter. Or some children like to study and want to go to school, and they don't have enough money to pay their school.
There's now a campaign funded by a partnership of private citizens in Texas and the state of Chihuahua to sustain their language, Rarámuri. She says language sustains a culture. Then she makes a metaphor that loosely means hunger in the Sierra is both nutritional and cultural. She explains, Tarahumara are hungry in their stomachs, and they're hungry to maintain their cultural identity that, despite severe stress, survives. I'm Lorne Madelon.
There's a common misperception about Austin's fastest-growing minority group. People may think that title belongs to Hispanics, but turns out that although Hispanics are the largest minority group, they aren't the fastest-growing. As KUT's Joy Diaz reports, although numbers are still relatively small, Asian Americans are the fastest-growing group in Austin.
This story is about a group of people who only have two things in common. They come from one massive region in the world, Asia, and they have collided here in Central Texas. But that's it. Other than that, each is unique. There's, for instance, Surajan Bhagat.
This is Rag Jinjoti, a melodic scale for the springtime.
He's sitting on the floor with his legs in the lotus position. He's dark-skinned, a cyclist, environmentalist, and days from graduating from St. Edward's University. Then there's Chet Su, 73 years old, give or take.
When I was born, they didn't keep birth certificates, so it's no telling. My parents' approximation.
Su has many stories to tell. Some are tarnished by memories of growing up in a country that made him feel oppressed. No, his stories are not about his native China, but about a United States of America many in the younger generations don't recognize, and many in the older generations want to forget. Su's father would tell him about the detention centers where undocumented Chinese were held in the 1920s.
Now, the reason they had to come illegally was the United States was sort of racist in its policies toward immigration. They didn't want people that weren't Europeans to come there.
There's one more person in this diverse group you'll get to meet for now.
My name is Yang Suk Choi.
Choi is an artist, acclaimed by the New York Times for her work as a children's book author and illustrator. She's from South Korea, lived in New York for a while, and moved to Austin 2 years ago.
My favorite thing about Austin is the big sky.
Choi is currently working on a book about the horrors experienced by children of war.
Because of the heavy subject matter, I thought, why don't I just pick a place that's peaceful and sunny That's how I came to Austin, to write a story.
Every week, she teaches art lessons to refugee children who now live in Austin.
Anything that you see, let's start with sky. Let's draw anything that you see in the sky first. See that bird? You can also draw a bird, too.
I see that digger going super fast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that one. That's what you're talking about.
The diversity of the Asian American community, even here in Central Texas, is massive. First, there's the Indian population. Then, the Chinese and Vietnamese.
Korean and Filipino now make up a third tier.
That's City of Austin demographer Ryan Robinson.
And then here was a real surprise for me. The fourth tier is comprised of Pakistanis. And so that's a very rapidly growing group.
Robinson dissects census data to better understand where Austin's Asian American population is headed.
In percentage terms, they're the fastest growing demographic group in Central Texas.
And that growth impacts many things. For instance, the way the city translates its communications to reach as many Austinites as possible.
We spend a lot of time at the City of Austin trying to determine what that third language is going to be. Of course, it's English, Spanish. That just goes without saying. And then there's a real competition for what that third language is.
The Asian American community in Austin is still searching for a unified identity, in part because it's so new to the region, but also because Austin lacks the geographical concentrations that San Francisco or New York have.
When we have created maps showing concentrations of Asian households, it's a phenomenal dispersal, even more dispersed than the African-American population.
And yet, its influence is now felt in everything from the tradition of Chinese restaurants that Chinese Austinites established back in the 1800s to yoga classes taught by the newest but largest group of Asians, Indian Americans, and from Austin's newly built Asian American Resource Center with its sculptures and fountains. It's not clear what happened first, if Austin became a vibrant community because of its diversity, or if the city's diversity became a driving force behind its vibrancy. Either way, Sarajan Bhagat, the environmentalist, cyclist, musician, who also happens to be the child of an Indian diplomat, says he appreciates Austin's diversity because he doesn't have to belong to just one group.
Well, I've only truly lived in India for 2 years of my life. Is this what an Indian is? But am I also Bulgarian? You know, I love Bulgaria. And I really hope to go back there one day, my place of birth.
Stepping outside his house,
hey, little one.
Bhagat's chickens approach curiously.
I'm an Austinite now because I'm here, and the water that I drink comes from the aquifer. So what I've been eating is what I've been becoming, you know.
And so, just like Bhagat, now 100,000 people from all over Asia can be united in that identity, the identity of an Austinite. Joy Diaz, KUT News.
Catholicism is a big part of the identity for many Hispanics, but these days fewer Hispanics are identifying as Catholic. We'll take a closer look at what religious choices Hispanics are making in the U.S. That story on Fronteras after the break. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Most Hispanics in the United States are Catholic, but there's a shift happening. Nearly one in four Latino adults are now former Catholics. That's according to a new study from the Pew Research Center. It conducted a nationwide survey last year of more than 5,000 Hispanic adults across the nation. Carrie Funk, senior researcher at Pew, co-authored the report.
What we're seeing is a decline in the share of Hispanics who are Catholic, down from just 2010, down 12 percentage points from 67% to 55% today.
Funk said the study also found an increasing number of Hispanics identify as Protestant or not affiliated with any religion. That puts a growing number of Hispanics at opposite ends of the religious spectrum.
What this means also is a greater degree of religious polarization. with evangelical Protestants at one end of expressing and showing high levels of religious commitment, religiously unaffiliated at the kind of the lower levels of expressing religious commitment, and Catholics in the middle.
There's another trend happening that at first may sound a bit perplexing. At the same time that we see fewer Hispanics identifying as Catholic, the percentage of all Catholics in the U.S. who are Hispanic is increasing. How is this so? Experts say both trends are possible because the Hispanic population is growing. Pew data show the Hispanic population's gone from 12.5% of the entire U.S. population in 2000 to nearly 17% in 2012. Here's a brain twister for you. If both of these trends we've been talking about continue, there could be a time later where the majority of U.S. Catholics will be Hispanic, even though the majority of Hispanics will no longer be Catholic. Stay with me. We wanted to get a closer look at all of this data, so we called up Father Virgilio Elizondo. He's professor of pastoral and Hispanic theology at Notre Dame and parochial vicar, or assistant pastor, at St. Rose of Lima Church in San Antonio.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful parish. I've been there now about 16 years, I guess.
What does your congregation look like, and how many people would you say?
Well, it's we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 masses on weekends, and I'd say we average 1,200 per service. So that'd be 6,000 on a given Sunday. Very mixed. We have many Filipino Americans. We have mixed marriages. We have Polish. We have Germans. We have a lot of Mexican Americans, a lot of Mexicans, some Peruvians, Colombians.
That's quite diverse.
Some Nigerians. Yeah, it's a very very diverse congregation.
Would you say the majority is Hispanic?
I would think so, yeah. Of different generations. Some have been here a long time, and some we have some recently arrived.
I asked him what he made of the report that says nearly 1 in 4 Latinos are former Catholics.
Well, I think they're following the national trend. If you were to check on Italian Americans or Irish Americans or any other number, I would say they probably have left in greater numbers.
According to their study, some Hispanics are going to Protestant or unaffiliated.
Right. Well, that's, you know, I think in the United States, I would consider that very normal. I consider that normal trend of people going to different churches. You know, you have choices. And mm-hmm. So in the States, people are free to make a choice.
What about the choice to not have any religion that some Hispanics are making?
Well, I think it follows the whole secularization. Of secularization model that many other Americans have also made. In fact, what I find exciting about the report is how interested Hispanics are in religion.
In just general. Religion in general.
Right. Because I find it wherever the Catholic Church is reaching out to Hispanics, the churches are packed. When I was at the cathedral near San Antonio, if you didn't get half an hour early to our noonday mass on Sundays, you couldn't even walk in. And so it was, I mean, we used to average, 60 baptisms a month? But I was amazed how many adults came into the church this year on the Easter Vigil, on Holy Saturday night.
Do you think the Pope has something to do with reinvigorating people?
I think in the long term, yes. I think a lot of people are excited about the Pope, Catholics and non-Catholics. I was at a Jewish celebration, and they were all just super excited about the Pope. I was at a celebration some time ago at a Swedish seminary in Chicago. They were a runaway group from Lutheranism, and all they wanted to talk about was the Pope. That wasn't my topic that I was going to speak about. That's why I ended up speaking about him, you know, because they had so many questions about it. They were just excited about him. You know, so I think the Pope is having a great influence on everyone. His sincerity, his you know, his ability to speak off the cuff and say beautiful things, and just who he is very, very attractive.
Am I hearing you say that you are just glad to see people taking part in religion doesn't have to be Catholicism?
Well, I believe in Catholicism. I would like to see them be Catholics. But I think on the bigger picture, I would rather see people excited about Christianity or religion in general than no religion. I think I would worry about the group that's not going to any church.
Repeatedly in my talk with Father Virgil, one theme kept coming up, hope.
I think, because I see the tradition growing amongst young people. I see many young people that are remaining within the church and being excited about it. I see, for example, in vocations in the seminary. We have many more Hispanics than we had. So I think, you know, I don't think the percentage is going to drop much more.
Is it fair to say we are not seeing this in San Antonio? You're not seeing it at your church.
Definitely not. Definitely not. But I haven't seen it in Chicago or New York, you know, where the Hispanics are not being served. Then I see a tremendous switch. And as one Protestant minister told me, says, if the family cannot feed the children, then the neighbors have an obligation to feed them. So if the Catholic Church is not ministering to the people, then we have an obligation to bring them in. You have some very sincere, very beautiful evangelical and Protestant ministers, and Latinos are personal. You know, they're attracted to the personality of the minister.
That was Father Virgilio Elizondo. He's professor of pastoral and Hispanic theology at Notre Dame and assistant pastor at St. Rose of Lima Church here in San Antonio. You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. You can find the entire audio for this program and past Fronteras shows online at tpr.org under the Programs tab. If you want to share these stories with your friends on social media, there are one-click buttons to Facebook and Twitter. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.